Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Pesachim is daf Dalad. The Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the Masechta, told us that there's a mitzvah of bedikas chametz. You have to check for chametz on the eve of the 14th. The Mishnah doesn't actually say the word eve. The Mishnah says to the light of the 14th. The Mishnah's lashon is or la'arba asar. So, but we know that the word or that is used in the Mishnahs and the Braisos is a reference to night. The Aramaic word for nighttime is orta. And so when the Mishnah uses the word or la'arbasar, it means the night. So the simple question is, why would the Mishnah do that? Why would the Mishnah use a word which generally means day? Vayi erev, vayi voker yom echad. Right, I'm sorry, the quoted the wrong pasuk in Bereishis. Vayikra lokim la'or yom. Okay, that's better. One of the Gemara's eight psukim that the Gemara quoted on Daf Beis that indicated that the word or is a reference to light, not to night. And so why would the Mishnah do that? Why would the Mishnah use the word or to try to communicate to us that we have to check for chametz on the night of the 14th and the as opposed to the day of the 14th? The Gemara asked that question in yesterday's daf. And yesterday, the Gemara wonders why that should be. And the Gemara is basically, his answer is lishna ma'alya, meaning, in other words, it's a euphemism. Of course we mean night, meaning there's a mitzvah of bedikas chametz at night. But the Mishnah wants to use a nicer language, a lashon nekiyah. So therefore, euphemistically, we're going to refer to night, we're going to call day. It's a nicer way to refer to it as. And which the Gemara then segued yesterday into a beautiful discussion that when we choose our words, we should choose them very carefully, and we should always speak lashon nekiyah. We should always speak in a clean language, meaning, obviously, you know, without profanity and without vulgarity, but to the best of our ability, we have to speak cleanly. We have to speak lashon nekiyah, and the Gemara spent a lot of time yesterday discussing that. The Gemara actually told us a story. One of the last things we spoke about yesterday was a story about Kohanim, where each one of them was asking for the portion of the lechem upon him, and one of the Kohanim said, "You know, I'd like a portion about the size of the tail of a lizard." Which, and there's nothing wrong with what he said, there's nothing bad about what he said, but the comparison of the lechem upon him to the tail of something which itself is not kosher, so they did a background check on him, the Gemara pointed out yesterday, and they found out that his yichus was somewhat tainted. So according to one version of the how the story ended. So anyway, so the Gemara was making a point yesterday that we should always speak b'lashon nekiyah, we should always try to clean up our language as best as possible. The Gemara, however, points out there's another idea which the Gemara spoke about yesterday, and that is that when you communicate in learning, you always want to teach something succinctly. If you're long and you are and you go on about a particular topic, and you don't make your point very 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 tersely and very briefly, so then you're at the risk of not being able to communicate the message well. So therefore, that's another point to consider. And so therefore the Gemara says, if these two concepts are at odds with one another, meaning, in other words, it's not the cleanest way to say it, it's not the nicest way to say it, but I get my point across quickly and with brevity. So the Gemara says, in learning, you should be be brief. We ended off the Gemara yesterday with a story. Not quite sure what it's doing here, meaning what the segue was into the story, but it's a fascinating story about a non-Jew who was eating Karm Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra gave him some advice. You know, the Torah says, "Lifnei iver lo sitei michshol," you're not allowed to give a stumbling block in front of a blind man. So Rav Yehuda ben Becerra does exactly that. He gives a stumbling block for this individual, but for good reason, meaning this individual was not allowed to eat Karm Pesach. The Torah says, "Kol benecha lo yochal bo." The Torah, a non-Jew is not allowed to eat Karm Pesach. He flaunted it. He ate Karm Pesach. So Rav Yehuda ben Becerra says, next year you're up in Yerushalayim, so I want you to ask for the tail of the Karm Pesach. So for us insiders, we know the tail of the Karm Pesach is not eaten by anybody. He goes up onto the Mizbech. He goes to Yerushalayim next year. He asks for the tail of the Karm Pesach. And what do they hand him? They hand him nothing. And what do they realize? Wait a second. Who told you to ask us for the Karm Pesach? Sorry, for the tail of the Karm Pesach. And his response was Rav Yehuda ben Becerra, and then red flag, meaning, what Rav Yehuda ben Becerra is telling you to ask us for the tail? That doesn't make any sense. They did a background check on him. I guess that's the connection, background check. They did a background check on him, and they found out that he was not Jewish, and they killed him. And last thing we discussed yesterday, I cited Tosfos yesterday. Tosfos had a really simple question: why wasn't Rav Yehuda ben Becerra up in Yerushalayim for Yontif, for Pesach, for Karban Pesach? And Tosfos gave three answers. We went over the three answers yesterday, all very challenging answers of Tosfos in terms of why exactly Rav Yehuda ben Becerra was not there.
Okay.
That's not, it's funny, of the answers, Tosfos gives three, Tosfos, that's not one of them. But, okay, it's possible. Okay, we are in Gimel Amud Beis. We are continuing from right where we left off yesterday. And we're starting with Rav Kahana. So the Gemara now is going to go on. Now, the next about 10, 15 lines of Gemara are basically going to keep to this idea, keep to this theme, Lashon Nekiyah, that you should speak cleanly, you should speak properly. And part of this idea of speaking properly is, don't be the bearer of bad news. I've made some observations over the course of my short life. I notice that we tend to like to be the bearer of bad news, right? Right? Did you hear? So usually that doesn't follow up with positive information. But in other words, the Gemara says that's not proper. It's not appropriate. And you're going to see a couple of stories that we're going to say over here in the Gemara, which are really going to be interesting in terms of here's what not to relate to other people. So, for example, Gemara is going to give a couple of examples. Rav Kahana Chala Shadur Rabban Rav Yeshua Bered Rav Idi. So Rav Kahana got sick, and so they sent an ambassador. Rav Yeshua Bered Rav Idi Amar Le Zil Badok My Dine. So they sent him as an ambassador. Now, again, what's going on over here? How come they're sending one rabbi as an ambassador to go visit Rav Kahana? I've mentioned this a number of times. I really do believe this. There's like a story behind the story. Like there's more going on behind what the Gemara is telling us right now. But okay, just let's stay with the Gemara and let's just deal with the simple point the Gemara is trying to communicate to us. So So he goes and checks on how Rav Kahana is doing, and unfortunately, he's not doing well at all. In fact, he passed away. Kare lilavushe. So what does Rav Kahana do? So he tears kriya. Okay. Halach is that you tear kriya. If you're there for Yitzias Neshama, for the actual death, time of death, so you do kriya on anybody. The Gemara in Moikatan tells us. And for a Talmud Chacham, even if you're not there, for an Adam Kasher, if I remember correctly, the Gemara in Moikatan says, you do kriya, so he tore kriya. Ve'ajrula kare la'achare. Now what he did is the following. Now, it's hard for us to envision this with our modern clothing, but back then they wore very loose clothing. It was almost like a toga. And so what he did is after he tore kriya, he flipped the garment so that the kriya was not facing forward, but the kriya was in the back. So anyone he was speaking to didn't notice that he tore kriya. Uvachi, and he started crying. And he came back to give a report about how Rav Kahana is doing. So Amalei Nach Nafshei. So he didn't say anything, meaning kriya. But remember, the kriya is now behind him, so they don't see the kriya, and he is crying, but he doesn't say anything. So they arrive at the conclusion: Nach Nafshei, must be the Rav Kahana died. So Amar Lahu Ana Lo Kamina. So he said, "I'm not saying that," meaning you're right, but I'm not going to actually report it. Motzi Diba Huksil. He quotes the pasuk from Mishlei. The pasuk says that Motzi Diba, that if you pass over any bad news, you're a fool. So in other words, he felt that they can infer from what they see that Rav Kahana died, but he's not going to actually tell them that Rav Kahana died. Yochanan Chakuka Nafak Likriyasa. The Gemara tells another story. Yochanan goes out to the village. And he goes and he gives a report. Now here, not a report on a person, but a report on how the fields are doing. Okay, farmer's report. So chita nasi yafos. So I wonder. They ask him, "How's wheat doing this year?" So armalehem sa'orim nasi yafos. So he gives an answer. And once again, the idea is that the wheat was not doing well. This was not a good harvest year. But he didn't want to report that. So instead, what he said is he changed topics, and he said, barley's doing great. Okay. Now, in the time of the Gemara, you should know, I mean, it may be true nowadays as well, I'm just not informed, but barley was eaten by animals. Meaning, even though it's one of the five grains, but basically barley is animal food, and wheat is food for the human beings, generally speaking. So he changed the topics and he talked about the barley. The barley crop is great this year. Amru leit seu baser lesusim lechamorim. Great. Why don't you tell that to the animals? Meaning, go out to you see the horses over there. Go inform them that the barley is doing great. So the Pasuk of Malachim says that what do you do with barley? You give barley to horses. So that's wonderful information, but that's not going to help us at all. We want to know how wheat is, meaning we want to eat. And you're giving us information, you're giving us a report on the barley. Now again, his intentions were the best of intentions, meaning his point is that the wheat was not doing well, and he didn't want to report that, so he changed the topic, but he changed the topic to something which was not flattering at all. So the Gemara says, so what should he have said? So the Gemara's next question, Mahavala Lameimar. So what should he have said? So he should have said something like, Gemara's going to give a couple of examples. Ishaki nasu chitim yafos. You know, last year's wheat crop was great. Okay, so in other words, and by inference, they're going to understand that this year's is not good. But at least then he's coming back with an answer, not directly giving the bad tidings. At the same time, however, not changing the topic to a sour topic about how the animal food is doing. Inami adashim nasu yafos, or you could talk about the lentils. Lentils are doing great this year, right? We'll have great lentil soup. But, okay, in other words, again, changing of the topic, not delivering bad news. One more story that speaks to this idea. We're now on the top of Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. Rav Baruch Hu de Rabbi Chiya Bar Achte. Rav was both a nephew of Rabbi Chiya and a nephew of Rabbi Chiya. You heard me correctly, but I'll say it again. Rav was both a nephew of Rabbi Chiya and a nephew of Rabbi Chiya, meaning, and this is going to be a real brain teaser, Rav's father was the brother Rabbi Chiya. Rav's mother was the sister Rabbi Chiya. Okay. Now, obviously, that makes for... makes for an interesting Thanksgiving. It sounds a little bit strange because then it comes out then that what the brother and sister married one another. Now that's an impossibility. That wouldn't happen, and certainly not in order to create Rav. So the Rashi goes through the whole family tree over here. You could see Rashi inside, but basically they were step Rav's mother and father were step siblings. So step siblings are allowed to marry. So, and then both of them had a relationship to Rabbi Chiya, meaning Rav's father had a paternal relationship with Rabbi Chiya, and Rav's mother had a maternal relationship, was siblings through the mom to Rabbi Chiya. Either way, the point being, so Rav was a nephew of Rabbi Chiya. So, Kisalak Lahasim, so he goes to Eretz Yisrael. You know, Rav, you know, he started his life in Eretz Yisrael, and then he moved to Bavel. And then periodically he went to go visit back his uncle back home in Eretz Yisrael. Rav was a nephew of Rabbi Chiya. Also, Rav was a student of Rabbi Chiya as well. And Rabbi Chiya, by the way, was a student of whom? Rabbi Chiya was a student of Rebbe. So in other words, so this generation of last generation of Tanaim, first generation of Amoraim, and Rav was really on the border. Meaning sometimes the Gemara says Rav Tana Upalig, meaning Rav sometimes had the status of a Tana. So we're like really at the threshold of the period between the Tanaim and the Amoraim. Rebbe was a Rebbe to Rebbe Chiya. Rebbe Chiya was a Rebbe and uncle to Rav. Okay, you get the basic picture. So Amar Lei, now these lines of Gemara are difficult to read simply because it's not 100% clear who Rebbe Chiya was asking about. But I'm going to go with Rashi's Pshat. You can take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos quotes another Pshat in the name of Rabbeinu Chananel. But I'm just going to stick right now with Rashi's Pshat in terms of what the questions were. So, Amale Aibu Kayim. Now, just one other piece of information before you understand the questions. Rav's parents were, his father was Aibu, and his mother's name was Ima. Now, I know Ima also means mother, but for the purpose of this discussion, father of Rav was Aibu, again, the brother to Rabbi Chiya. Rav's mother was Ima, sister to Rabbi Chiya. Let me start from the beginning. Amarle Aibu Kayam. So is dad still alive? Rabbi Chiya is asking Rav, meaning he's asking about his brother. Amarle Ima Kayam. Now again, I'm gonna go like Rashi. I'm gonna read the Gemara like Rashi. Ima Kayam ? Why don't you ask me about mom? Meaning, before you ask me about dad, ask me about mom. Again, same maneuver as what we saw in the bottom of the previous Amud. Not directly answering the question, because the answer is not a good answer. Dad's no longer alive, but he didn't want to say it directly, so he changed topics. Asked me about Mom. And again, the implication is, the inferred conversation between the two is that Dad is no longer alive. Rabbi Chiya understood that, but it moved on. Amalei ima kayamt. So now, Rabbi Chiya says, okay, how's Mom? Meaning, how's my sister? So Amalei aibu kayam. Well, why don't you ask me about Dad? And again, the news is not good news. He didn't want to answer directly, so he changed the topics to his father. So Amar Leila Shame. So now Rabbi Chiya understood that he's an Avol. Now, a little bit of Hilchos Avelus, just a little bit. If you learn about the death within 30 days, that's what's called the Shmo Krova. And then you are an official Avol, going through 7 days of Avelus. Then 30 days and that's it. Meaning for a brother and for a sister. If you learn about the death 30 days or later, after the actual death, so that's what's called a Shmua Rechoka. Now you've learned the news way after. In the olden days, this was much more common, much more frequent. Their method of communication was much slower, and so therefore you could hear about the death. It was common to hear about a death after 30 days after the actual death. So that's what's called Shmua Rechoka. Now, on a Shmur Rechoka, if you're an Avol as a result of a Shmur Rechoka, because you heard more than 30 days after the death, so now you are an Avol, but an Avol only for 1 day. And as we'll see in just a moment, maybe not even that. So, Amar Leil Shamei, so Rabbi Chiya says to his attendant, Chlotz li minali, baholich kli acharei lebeis amerchatz. So, I'm going to take off my shoe. In other words, I'm going to be knowing an Avol. I'll behave like an Avol. Avol's not allowed to wear leather shoes, so I'll behave like an Avol, and we're going to go to the Beis HaMerchatz, and we're going to go to the bathhouse. Now, odd, because an Avol's not allowed to take a bath, one of the prohibitions of Avelus is Rechitza. Shema min Atla, so the Gemara says, three conclusions to derive from this incident. Shema min Avol's also been Nilas HaSandel. Number one, an Avol is prohibited from wearing Nilas HaSandel. Now, generally speaking, we don't need this story to tell us that an Avol is prohibited to wear shoes. You can read the Gemara in Moed Katan, and the Gemara in Moed Katan teaches us, that one of the prohibitions of an Avol is not allowed to wear shoes. A lot of Rishonim point out that what we gain from this incident over here is that even though you're an Avol for a Shmur Rechoka, which is a minimal Avelus, it's a reduced Avelus, still you shouldn't wear shoes. Meaning that minig of Avelus that you should keep. So you shouldn't wear any shoes. Avol also benilas sandal. Ushma min hashmur rechoka einu nehegal sala yom achad. And on top of that, you're only knowing 1 day of avelus. And ushma mina mitzas yom kikulo. And as far as that 1 day is concerned, so much like we say by the 7th day of avelus mitzas yom kikulo, so too by the 1 day observed avelus of the shmur rechoka, going to say the same thing, mitzas yom kikulo. So therefore, it doesn't even have to be the entirety of the day. How do we know that from the story? Because he says to his attendant, we're going to go to the bathhouse. Meaning, I'm getting up from Avelus. Meaning, I'm going to sit Avelus, however long he sat, an hour, 2 hours. We don't have an exact time reference, but even though he only observed part of the day, we could apply the principle of Mixas Yom Kikulo, so he can get up in the middle of Avelus, in the middle of that 1 day. Okay. Again, what was the point of all these stories, these past couple of stories, that Lush and Nakia includes not being the bearer of bad news. Right? And this last story, by the way, really hammers it home, because in this last story, I mean, what was the example that was given? The example was, I mean, the death of a brother, the death of a sister. One would only imagine that that's important information. But Rabbi Chiya may want to know that. Still, it's not that you're not allowed to communicate that, but to communicate it directly, just not appropriate. Ha'udamar, we're going to have a couple more stories, and then the Gemara is going to end on this topic of Lashon Nekiya. Ha'udamar dunu daini. So a person happened to be very litigious, always interested in going to court, and one of his hallmark statements was, let's go to court. Okay? And, okay, it was just simply his personality. So amishmamina midan kase. And so, the Gemara says they did a background check on the individual. He actually comes from Shevet Dan. Okay. Yes, a play on words, but yes, also Dan. Right. Think of the pasuk regarding Dan. Dan Yadinamo, meaning that Dan, by its very nature, in fact, the name Dan. When who was the mother of Dan? Bila, Zilpah. Huh? Yeah, I'm also right. Is it Bila? Yeah, I think it was Bila. So right, Dante, right? Rachel named him. Right, Bila was a maidservant of Rachel. Rachel named Dante, meaning right, a curse bar who judged me. Okay, so the whole nature of Sheva Dan is judgment, is din. So this person who happened to have been very litigious, so he comes from Sheva Dan. And again, it's evident from his speech. A lot could be derived from the way a person speaks. Dechsiv Dan Yadinamo, Ke'echad Shiftei Yisrael. Ha'ahud Havaka Azov Amar, Achif Yama Asisna Birasa. Another person, the Gemara says, who always loved oceanfront property, always spoke about oceanfront property, as Rashi points out, loved the trees of oceanfront property. He pointed to the trees, Achif Yama Asisna Birasa. Right, that's cypress trees, one of the pshatim that Rashi says. Anyway, and again, just based on the lashon, on the language that he spoke, it was evident that he was from Shevet Zvulon. Zvulon had a propensity to enjoy ocean beachfront property. The pasuk says it again. One of the brachas Yaakov gives to Shevet Zvulon, Zvulon lechof yamim mishkan. He's by the beach. He's by the chof hayam. So again, speech really speaks a lot about who you are. Adkan Divrei HaGemara regarding the topic of Lashon Nikiya. And now we go back to a halachic discussion. Or to whom ichti. Bein Rav Yehuda, Bein Rav Meir, Chametz and Oser, Ela Mishesha Os Ulamala. So the Gemara now is going to ask a really straightforward question, a really basic question, and that's the following. Look, why is there a mitzvah B'dikas Chametz? So we basically know the answer. Because in just 24 hours from the eve of the 14th, we're going to be starting with Pesach. And with Pesach comes an Isser Chametz. And as we're going to learn over the course of today's daf and tomorrow's daf, the Isser Chametz actually doesn't start on Pesach. Again, when I say Pesach, I colloquially mean, you know, Chag HaMatzos, meaning the 15th day of Nisan to the 21st day of Nisan. So not only is there an Isser Chametz during the Yontif of Pesach, but on Erev Pesach, already there's an Isser Chametz min HaTorah. The end of today's daf, tomorrow's daf, we're going to talk about how we know this. But there's an Isser Chametz min HaTorah on Erev Pesach. On Erev Pesach, midday, Chametz now is already prohibited. So, the reason why there's a mitzvah to do Bedika is because we want to eradicate the Chametz, because we're about to enter into 7.5 days of Isser Chametz. And in Galus, 8.5 days. Fine. Get all that. What the Gemara wants to know, now understand a little bit better is, why the night prior? Meaning, the most we're talking about in terms of Isser Chametz is midday on Erev Pesach. So shouldn't there be a mitzvah maybe to check for Pesach, for Chametz maybe the morning? Right, the morning of Erev Pesach? Makes sense?
Too busy.
Oh, so essentially, that's basically going to be the Gemara's answer. So let's see the Gemara inside. So the Gemara says, "Mechti ben la Rabbi Yehuda ben la Rabbi Meir chametz and osra ala mishesh osun lamala v'niv dog b'shus." So the Gemara now wants to know 6 hour of the day. Okay, we'll do the hours not today. We'll do the hours tomorrow. But basically, say the 6 hours, the end of the morning, right? The 7th hour is the beginning of the afternoon. Okay, so why not check during the 6 hour? Right before Chametz actually becomes Aser. V'chitem is reason makdim l'mitzvos. So maybe there's this idea in the Torah that we have to be zaris. Right? In other words, we have a mitzvah opportunity. Do it as early as you can. Don't wait till the last minute. Don't procrastinate. Nivdok mitzafra. Good. So push it off to the morning. So in other words, you don't want to wait till the 6 hour. That's right before Aser Chametz. I understand. The idea of zrizin makdim l'mitzvos, you want to comply and be a zaris. Good. I understand that as well. So move it up to the morning. And check in the morning. We have a general idea, principle, that the 8th day is when you do the Mila. And really, the entirety of the 8th day is when you do the Mila. Okay, Right, Tosfos goes through the discussion, the pasuk being quoted over here is not really relevant to the milah. Okay, but anyway, right now, point being, we have an idea of Zriza Makdim LaMitzvos, so back it up to the morning. Right, then when there's a mitzvah of milah, don't wait till the afternoon to do the mitzvah of milah, do it in the morning. Same thing with this mitzvah of bedika, fine. The Isser Chametz is at the end of the 6th hour, so back it up and do the bedika in the morning. But why the night prior? What is that about? So the Gemara gives the answer. And that is the answer of Nachma Yitzchak. Look, the night's better for two reasons. And it could be these two reasons are really complementing one another. First of all, B'nei Adam Mitzuyim Bevatehem. That's when people are home. People are home on the night at night. Right? Everyone's coming back from work. Everyone's home. And furthermore, or an area for the bedika. Also, the artificial light provided by the candle is actually a better light, meaning sunlight that comes in through the windows, so you can't control that light, meaning that light's going to come in, but there's still going to be shadows that are cast, and you're not going to be able to look into nooks and crannies. But once you have an artificial light at night, where essentially now you can actually control the light and looks in the nooks and crannies of your home, so that's a better light, and that's why the bedika at night is going to be better. Okay. So basically the Gemara gives two reasons why we should be doing bedika at night. Number one, because that's when people are home, and number two, because you have that or haner, which for bedika purposes is a better or. Tam Chacham on Erev Pesach, meaning Lel Erev Pesach, on the eve of the 14th, don't start learning, meaning obviously the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah, Talmud Torah's primary mitzvah, the primacy of Talmud Torah, but now there's a mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. And even though the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, let's call it a mitzvah derabbanan. In fact, the Gemara today is going to call it a mitzvah derabbanan. Even though it's a mitzvah derabbanan, but still a mitzvah, so better that the Talmud Chacham shouldn't start engaging in any type of Limud at that point in time, because that's when the Bedikas should be done. And he'll get engrossed in his learning, and he'll get sidetracked, and he won't do the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. So don't start learning on the night of the 14th. Okay, and then the Gemara launches into some very basic halachic questions regarding whose responsibility is it to do a bedika. So in other words, now the Gemara has firmly established that there is a mitzvah of bedika. I mean, the Mishnah already told us that. The Gemara tells us why there's a mitzvah of bedika. And now the Gemara is going to discuss who has to do the mitzvah of bedika. So, the assumption, first of all, first and foremost, is homeowners. Meaning, a homeowner, you own a home, and you live in the home, you must do a bedika. Okay. Question now becomes, what if you're the homeowner, but you're renting it out to somebody else? Under such circumstances, whose responsibility is it to do a bedika? The Gemara basically vacillates between two options. I mean, really, there only are two options. Although I'm sure if we were creative, we could come up with a third. But in other words, if you have a renter and a rentee, so whose responsibility is it to do bedika? On one hand, the Gemara says, should be the renter, meaning the owner of the home. Why? The Gemara's lashon is de chamira di dehu, because chametz belongs to him, meaning he's the owner. Exactly what the Gemara means by that, meaning the chametz belongs to him, meaning he's renting the house. So, but what does that mean? It means he still retains, you know, any chametz that may be in the house. So, if you take a look at Tosos, the third Tosos on the Amud, the Gemara doesn't mean literally that the chametz belongs to him. It just simply means that as the owner, he has a responsibility to do bedika. And the moment before the actual rental contract was signed and the keys were handed over, he himself had a responsibility to do bedika. And so therefore, maybe the argument is, he cannot abdicate that responsibility. That's one option of the Gemara. On the other hand, right now, who's currently renting? The renter. Meaning, the Gemara's lashon is, Isur Birshusei Kai. right now as a renter. You're the owner. I understood, of course, you're not the actual owner. You're not the deed holder of the property. But still, while renting, you have all rights of usage of the house. Therefore, that makes the house yours for a brief period of time. But for that brief period of time, it's yours. You're responsible for it. So the Gemara now wants to know who should therefore assume the responsibility of Bedika. Tashma, the Gemara quotes, I'm asking by Chaver, Allah Socha Lasos La Mezuzah. So we know the halacha is that when you're renting a home, so the socher is the one who is required to put up the mezuzah. So the Gemara is just simply making a small little jump. If the socher is the one responsible to put up the mezuzah, therefore he should be the one doing the responsible for the Bedika as well. The Gemara says that's a little bit of a jump and maybe we shouldn't jump. The Gemara says, I'm not sure if that's excellent evidence, meaning because, yeah, you're right, the mezuzah is incumbent upon the renter. However, the mezuzah is a chovas hadar. The requirement of the mezuzah, the obligation of the mezuzah, is for the person who's currently occupying and living in the home. So in other words, that halacha may be specific to mezuzah, but may not translate to bedika. So hachamai. So the Gemara quotes a brisa, Masker brisa chavero, imachel amasel amavtechos chal arba asar ala masker livdog, v'imish amasel amavtechos chal arba asar ala socha livdog. So the Gemara says it depends when the contract was ratified. And we'll talk about ratification in just a second. But in other words, if the lease agreement between the owner and the landlord and the tenant is accomplished before the 14th, and by 14th we mean eve of the 14th, so if it occurred then, so then it becomes the responsibility of the tenant.
There's no kinyan required.
Oh, I'll get to that in just a second. If, however, the contract was ratified after the 14th, meaning on the 14th, anytime after nightfall, so then the landlord who started with that obligation cannot abdicate that obligation, and he therefore must do the bedika. Now the Gemara says, what's the tipping point? Where exactly is this contract ratified? So the Gemara's lashon is the Mesira of the keys. The handing over of the keys. The handing over of the keys, that's the actual kinyan. So Rashi says, yeah, that's the actual kinyan. Take a look at Rashi. I'm going to read Rashi, Mesira sa Mafteach. Rashi is about 7 lines from the bottom of the Amud. So who kinyan aschirus? So Rashi says that when you hand over the keys, that's the actual kinyan. So that's how Rashi understands that when you're handing over the keys, that's it. In other words, is that in absence of a contract? Is that with a contract? I'm unclear in terms of why over here the handing over the keys becomes the operative kinyan. Maybe it's kinyan suter, maybe that's the way that's just simply understood, that we are ratifying the deal with the handing over of the keys. I know when you buy a car, even though you sign all that paperwork, if you feel like the owner of the car wants to hand you the keys. So, all right, it could be that's Kinyan Sudar. Again, we don't have the time right now, but take a look at Tosos. Tosos does not agree with Rashi that the handing over of the keys is the actual Kinyan. Take a look at Tosos for a discussion about that. We're back to the Gemara. Okay. You rent a house on the 14th day of Nisan. All right. You made your vacation plans a little bit late. Fine. And now you're renting from a Jew and you came to an agreement, a rental agreement, on the 14th. Okay. Erev Pesach. Meaning after nightfall. Okay. So sometime in the early morning of the 14th or even midday of the 14th. Now you're the proud renter of a nice home over the course of Pesach. What presumption can you make? Can you assume that the owner of the home did the bedika and you therefore are free and clear of just enjoying Pesach in this home? Or do you have to go through the trouble of doing the bedika? So, my nafkamina, the Gemara says, now, again, any question that the Gemara asks, the Gemara is not into philosophy. The Gemara wants to know, practically speaking, what difference does it make whether there's a presumption, whether there's not a presumption? Lishailihu, the Gemara says, you know, all this can be very clearly cleared up by asking him. meaning let the tenant go over to the landlord and say, look, there's a mitzvah of bedika. Really, the mitzvah is incumbent upon you, because you had it as the 14th day was entering. Did you actually do it? It's not that hard. Just ask him. So the Gemara says, Delay Salahai Delisha. So the Gemara says, okay, if he's there, obviously ask him. He's not there. So in other words, you rented, you did it through a middleman, right? So you had a broker who brokered the deal. And so now you're renting. The rental started on the 14th day, meaning the beginning of the 14th day, this property was in the ownership of the original owner, of the owner. And now you only started the rental on the 14th, and he's not there. You can't ask him. So now, can you assume that he fulfilled his responsibility of doing a bedika? Meaning, it's already been established that the owner is responsible to do the bedika. We know that. The question is presumption. What assumptions can you make? Can you assume that he did what he was supposed to do? So the Gemara says, that's the question. So, should now this renter, this tenant, have to go through the trouble of bedika, or can he assume that the owner of the home did what he was supposed to do? Amlu Rav Nachman Yitzchak Tenisua. So he says, it's a braisa. And how does the Braisa speak to this question? Because the Braisa reads as follows: Ha kol ne'emanim al bir chametz, afilu nashim, afilu avadim, afilu ketanim. Everyone is given credibility for bedikas chametz. Meaning, generally speaking, when we talk about credibility, so first of all, you need witnesses. Generally speaking, you need witnesses. Witnesses have to be two men, adult. Shomer mitzvos. Okay. The Gemara says that when it comes to the mitzvah of bir chametz or bedikas chametz, so everyone is afforded credibility. Women, slaves, minors. These are people who normally are not afforded credibility in halacha, but for bedikas chametz they are. Now, we're going to explore this a little bit better in just a moment, but right now I'm going to go through the thread of the Gemara first just to see how the Gemara is connecting this to our question, and then we'll go back and I'll discuss more details regarding this idea. So what do we see clearly from the Braisa? All these people who normally don't have Nemanus are afforded Nemanus for the purposes of Bedikas Chametz. Now, my time to Mehemne. Now the Gemara asks a really simple question. Why are they believed? Meaning, generally speaking, they don't have credibility. So why here by Bedikas Chametz are they believed? Now, it must be, Gemara argues, because there's a presumption, meaning that what they're really testifying, they didn't even need to testify for. Meaning that we have a general presumption that we do the right thing. And the right thing is on Erev Pesach, we have to do a bedika. So therefore, when they're testifying, all they're really doing is saying something which we would have known anyway. The Gemara in just a moment is going to ask the obvious question. Well, if that's true, so then why do they even need to testify at all? Okay, that's the obvious question. We're going to get to that in just a moment. But first of all, this idea that we presume that Jews do the right thing. The Gemara quotes a braisa. Let's say, Rachman Lotzlan, you have a farmer who is a chaver. Chaver is just simply the term the Gemara uses to describe somebody who's careful about his performance of mitzvos. So what happens is he died. And as part of his estate, there was a silo full of fruit. Did he take off Trumas and Maestros? Unfortunately, we do not know. Because he's a chaver, we're going to assume the answer is yes. He's going to do the right thing. He's not going to leave fruit in his house Eino Mesukan, that has not been tithed, where Trumas and Maestros have not been taken off. So the Braisa says, Chavish HaMeiz V'inech Megur Malei HaPeros, Afilu HaBnei Yonmam, and even if they were collected today, the assumption is by the Chaver, not for a second, not for a moment, he's going to leave it untithed. Harein Becheskas Mesukanim. So the Gemara says that what our presumption is that for Bedikas Chametz, same thing. Everyone's going to have a status, a presumed status, that they're going to do the right thing, which is they're going to do bedika. So now, this renter, who assumed the rent, the rental agreement of the property on the 14th day of Nisan. He could not have a conversation with the owner. He wants to know, did the owner do bedika? The answer is going to be, sure. The presumption is he did it. So the Gemara says, yeah, but maybe you can argue the following. Here, it's not because of a presumption, but rather it's because the woman, the Eved Kenani, or the Katan actually said that there was a bedika. Meaning, they did declare that a bedika was done. The Gemara says, and even though they declared it, so what? Hani atu amir dahani midi mashasha isbei? Okay, they made a declaration. But halachically speaking, these are people who generally do not have credibility halachically. So to which the Gemara now wonders. So even if they said something, what difference does it make? Elamai techeskas obadok. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's go back with your assumption, with your understanding, which is that really there's a presumption being made. And the presumption is just like the case of the fruit in the silo, where we assume that the chaver who died took off Trumas and Maitros, so therefore it's based on a chazaka. Here too, we're going to say that really it's based on a chazaka. So now the Gemara says, now let's ask the very straightforward question. Hai hakol ne'emanim, so then why when the Brice on the bottom of the previous summit said that women are believed, why does the Brice say women are believed? It has nothing to do with their reporting, it has to do with chazaka. In fact, what the Brisa should have said is, "Kol habatim becheskas bedukim ba'arba asar mi ba'ilei." The nusach of the Brisa should have been, houses are presumed to have been checked. Meaning, as long as there was an owner going into the 14th day of Nisan, we're going to assume that he checked. Why doesn't the Brisa say it that way? Why does it make the Brisa make it sound like everything's going to be contingent based on the report of either the woman, the Eved Kenani, or the katan? So elamai mishum amira dahani halo amre hani lo. So the Gemara says, okay, so now let's go back to your pshat. Your pshat is that it's based on the reporting of the women, and that means is that without the reporting of the women, we're going to assume that the house was not checked. Tifshamine dein cheskas obadok. So then that's going to tell us then that generally speaking, we're not going to work with that presumption that houses are checked. In other words, I realize the Gemara just went through a lot of back and forth. But basically, let me just try to present the Gemara pretty straight and simple. The Gemara now wonders, look, there was an owner to the house at the beginning of the 14th day of Nisan. The night of the 14th, there was an owner, and the rental contract was not yet agreed upon, signed upon. Keys were not handed over yet until the next morning. And the question now becomes a really simple question. Can we assume that the owner did what he was supposed to do, which is check the house? Yes or no? That's really what it comes down to. And the Braisa confuses us, because the Braisa says that when a woman reports that a bedika was done, you can believe her. Well, is it her testimony? Or is it just simply a presumption? Well, if it's her testimony, she normally doesn't have credibility. And if there was a presumption, so why does the Braisa say she can testify? That's really what's confusing us right now. And the Gemara now is going to try to clarify. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara starts off with, we have a presumption. Every home going into Pesach is presumed to have been checked. Again, assuming there's an owner, and you know, with the obvious assumption that the owner is somewhere within the vicinity, so we're going to assume that the home was checked. Right? Jews do the right thing. And we're going to assume that to be the case. V'hacha, so if that's true, so then the Braisa confuses us. Not even confuses us, meaning seems to be unnecessary. Where the Braisa says that if a woman testifies that the house was checked, so then you can believe her. Quite frankly, we don't need her testimony. We have a chazaka. Hacha b'mayaskin and demuchzak landelo badak. The Braisa was talking about a case where we know the house was not checked. Meaning, let's imagine, let's envision the owner somewhere else right now. We know. We know that the house was not checked. So now we'll allow testimony that the house was checked, and even though the testimony is coming from somebody who doesn't normally give testimony, meaning a woman, meaning an Eved Kenani, meaning even a katan. Vika amri hani bat kane. Mao de tema Lo lehemnu rabbanan. Now we're going to explain what the chiddush of the braith is. I might have thought, well, we're not actually going to believe them. Kamash malan, kevin debitikas chametz midrabananu, demidaraisa bibitaba masagile, hemnu rabbanan bidrabanan. So the Gemara tells us that we're going to believe them. Why? Because really, what can I do? What I can do is just simply eradicate the chametz. How? Through a process called bittul. We talked about this on day one of the Masechta. Right? In other words, when the owner of the house says, I'm going to be mevatel my chametz, so at that point in time now, he's declared the chametz to be null and void. So now, really, min ha-Torah, that's all that needs to be done, and therefore there is no chametz for him on Pesach. And so, but nevertheless, even though bittul is enough, a long stepped in the Chachamim and said, we're demanding this mitzvah midrabban of bedika. Even though bittul by itself would obviate the need for bedika, but the Chachamim are demanding it. So in other words, bedika is chametz, it's a mitzvah derabanan. And because bedika is chametz, it's a mitzvah derabanan, on derabanan matters, we're going to afford credibility to nashim ketanim v'avadim.
Even though you know it wasn't done.
Right, correct. In other words, you know. Right, if you don't know, and the owner was there, you'll assume that he did the bedika. But if you know it wasn't done, and then along comes out from the house comes a woman and says, look, the owner was not here, but I did the bedika, she's afforded credibility. Okay, a lot of things to discuss at this point in time in the Gemara, and let me just hit on some very basic topics to discuss. The Gemara is, first of all, two big topics. Okay, I'll go in the order of Tosfosim. Okay, so second Tosfos on the Amud. Tosfos says, before I go to Tosfos, let me go in chronological order. Let me start with Rashi. Okay, the Gemara says that, truth be told, is that there really is no need for a bedikah on a Torah level, because you could do bittul. And what does bittul accomplish? Well, it's kind of, I'm setting ourselves up with that question. What do you mean, what does bittul accomplish? It gets rid of the chametz. Look at Rashi. Rashi says bebitul ba'alma. Rashi is about a third of the way down on the Amud. It's the first words on the line of Rashi. The divra amasko bebitul ba'alma dichsiv tashbisu veloksiv tevaru vehashbata delev hi hashbata. We know we're going to see this. We'll see it tomorrow. In other words, I'm going to stop at the two dots. So, but we're going to see tomorrow that the mitzvah of, or the prohibition of chametz on Erev Pesach is based on the pasuk of Tashbitu Seor Mibateichem. You got to get rid of the leaven in your house. The Gemara later on, we'll do this tomorrow. The Gemara is going to point out that can't be talking about on Pesach. Meaning, where there already is an Isser chametz, the Torah is not going to be instructing us, okay, get rid of it. Obviously, the Torah means before Pesach. Meaning, the day before Pesach. So on Erev Pesach, there's a mitzvah of Tashbisu. Rashi's understanding of this mitzvah of Tashbisu, that's not an active mitzvah. In fact, Rashi says, what does the Torah not say? Tiva'aru. I need you to destroy the chametz. Rather, says Rashi, Tashbisu means, says Rashi, I just simply need you, I need the chametz not to be there. In other words, the way Rashi understands it, the mitzvah to eradicate chametz is not a positive commandment. It's just simply, I need there not to be chametz. It's passive. Rashi says that. And Rashi says, and how can I accomplish that? Even belayv. Meaning, even I don't have to actually pick chametz up and get it out of my house. All I need to do, says Rashi, is just simply say, the chametz in my house, not mine. Hashbas belayv serves as a mitzvah of eradicating chametz. That is Rashi's understanding of the mitzvah of Tashbisu. Now let's take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos says, "Medarais bebitul ba'amasage perish bekuntros midichsiv Tashbisu veloksiv tivaru amash bata b'leiv he." So first, Tosfos quotes Rashi v'kashilari, and Tosfos says that's very difficult. Dahayash basa havarehi. He absolutely disagrees with Rashi. He says that the mitzvah of Tashbisu is an active mitzvah. Now, what does Tashbisu mean? Tashbisu means Tevaru, meaning the way Tosfos understands the mitzvah of Tashbisu, not the passive, I just simply not do not have chametz in my house, but the Torah is actively telling us to get rid of chametz. V'lo bito d'tanya b'shmaitan Rabbi Akiva omer ein tzarech harehu omer tashbisu u'matzino la'avar shi'av malacha. And we know, again, Tosfos is based on a Gemara which we haven't seen yet. We're going to see it tomorrow. But basically the idea is that tashbisu has to be something active. In fact, Rabbi Akiva compares it to one of the malachas on Shabbos, and one of the malachas on Shabbos is lo sivaru esh b'chol moshvei sechem. In other words, tashbisu and BR are synonymous. So Tosfos therefore says that tashbisu is actively eradicating it. V'o tashbisu amin l'kaman me'ach halakshu m'sheshaw salmala v'ach yisur lo mahani bito. V'omeri, so therefore, now we have a very fundamental debate between Rashi and the Ri in terms of what the actual mitzvah of tashbisu is. So according to the Ri, tashbisu means to eradicate. So now, basic issue. So now, according to the Ri, so what are we doing mid-daraisa? What's Bittul accomplishing? V'omari de mid-daraisa be-bittul ba-masagim itam de-me'achir shebidlu ha-ve-hefker v'yotza mirishuso. So what the Ri understands that what Bittul accomplishes is that Bittul makes it no longer yours. In other words, basically we're going to have now another basic machlokas between Rashi and the Ri. What is Bittul accomplishing? So according to Rashi, it's kind of hard to put in words what exactly Bittul is accomplishing. According to the Ri, it's not hard at all to put in words what Bittul is accomplishing. You're declaring it not yours. In other words, there is a mitzvah in the Torah of Tashbisu to actively get rid of chametz, but whose chametz? Only your chametz. Your chametz you need to get rid of. By declaring bittul prior to that moment in time, you're just simply saying it's not mine. And by saying it's not mine, so therefore I don't have this active mitzvah of bior, because that's not my chametz. Okay, so the first thing I want to go over today is just this very basic machlokas between Rashi and the Ri regarding what exactly the mitzvah of Tashbisu is, and what is being accomplished with Bittul. So according to Rashi, Bittul is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Tashbisu, because Tashbisu is simply passive. It doesn't actively require me to do anything, as opposed to Tosfos. Tosfos says, no, the mitzvah of Tashbisu is the active, you must get rid of chametz. What is Bittul doing? It's sidestepping the whole issue, because what Bittul is doing is just simply saying, that chametz doesn't belong to me. And the mitzvah of Tashbisu is only for chametz, that's mine. Okay, that's number one, very basic machlokas between Rashi and the Ri, and this could be explored for a very long time. This machlokas, obviously not now. And the other issue that we're going to cover to end off today's daf is the following. What did the Gemara say? The Gemara says that the mitzvah of bedikas chametz, it's a mitzvah derabbanan. Okay, so when we go out there on the 14th, on the eve of the 14th, and we check for chametz, so we're fulfilling a mitzvah midrabbanan, because min ha-Torah, I could have done bittul. Okay. And because it's a din derabbanan, so therefore women are afforded credibility. Tosfos over here, next Tosfos on the Amud, asks a really straightforward question, which is the following. We know, we've been going through this whole discussion of the Gemara saying women aren't afforded credibility. That's not accurate. Okay, let's think about this for a moment. Okay, I get invited to somebody's house for Shabbos. Okay, I'm going to sit down at their table. I'm going to eat their food. How do I know the food is kosher? Okay, so most of the time it's because the woman of the house prepared the food. Now, did somebody stand over her, observing her? Did she have a mashgiach? Did she have two mashgiachim? No. So how do I know the food's kosher? What? The answer is, because she says it's kosher. In other words, I'm going to believe, this happens every single time you eat. Not only at somebody else's house, I don't want to need to give such a wild example. How about when I eat in my own home? Okay? In other words, it's based on the credibility afforded to women that the food is kosher. In other words, the Gemara says this principally. Eidecha ne'eman b'yisurin. So it's interesting. The Gemara says, well, bedika was done, and the women are believed believed for this. Why? Because it's a din derabbanan. Tosfos wonders, it's really straightforward. Even if it were din d'oraisa, aren't they afforded credibility? Don't we have a rule of eidecha ne'eman b'yisurin? And what are we talking about over here? The eradication of chametz, that's iser. So even if it were a din d'oraisa, it's not. But even if it were a din d'oraisa, shouldn't they be believed? That's Tosfos' question. Tosfos is really bothered by this. Tosfos suggests that maybe the mitzvah of bedikah is going to be different. Maybe the mitzvah of bedikah is not just a simple mitzvah. Tosfos says, meaning the mitzvah of bedikah is not just some sort of perfunctory, okay, let's go around the house for a couple of minutes, we'll play a little scavenger hunt, a little hide and seek. Tosfos says, no, the mitzvah of bedikah is a rigorous mitzvah. And so perhaps because it's such a rigorous mitzvah, so therefore it's different. It falls into its own separate category. That's Tosfos' suggestion in terms of why it is that women, had it been a din d'oraisa, women were not to be believed. But it makes for a very interesting discussion. And then the end of Tosfos, just one last point, we're out of time. But the end of Tosfos also goes on to discuss, by other dinei derabanan, we covered the topic of women. You know, the Gemara says children also are believed. I mean, that's bizarre. Ketanim never have nemanus. Meaning not by dina d'oraisa, not by dina d'rabbanan. Tosfos quotes an example in Erevin where a child is not believed by dina d'rabbanan, by tchumim. So why our Gemara over here says that children are believed by bedikas chametz? So you can take a look at the end of Tosfos where he's also by that as well. Okay, so let's just quickly wrap up for today. Okay, today we ended the whole topic of lashon nekiyah, that a person has to speak with clean language. Why am I running to Tosfos? The Gemara tells a number of stories, including the story of Rav in his conversation with his uncle regarding the demise of his parents. Then the Gemara goes on to discuss more about the mitzvah bedikas chametz. First of all, basic question of the Gemara: why is the mitzvah bedikas chametz instituted for the nighttime? Why not the morning of the 14th? Answer: most people are home at night, and the controlled light of the Or HaNer creates a better way to do bedika. Renter and an owner and a tenant, whose responsibility is to do bedika? Answer of the Gemara is, depends when the contract has been ratified. If the contract has been ratified before the 14th, tenant's responsibility. If the contract's been ratified on the 14th, so then it is the owner's responsibility to do bedika. What presumption do we make if the owner didn't tell us that he did a bedika and the contract was ratified on the 14th, meaning after evening? So the Gemara says, the chazaka is the owner did what he was supposed to do, which means that he did a bedika. And if you know that he didn't do a bedika, credibility will be afforded to women, an Eved Kenani, and a Katan, that a bedika was in fact done. The Gemara's reason is because this is a mitzvah derabanan, and they are believed on mitzvahs derabanan. And then we ended off today discussing Tosfos. Well, why aren't they, even if we're a din d'oraisa, shouldn't they be believed as well? Tosfos gives an answer. And then the other big issue that we covered today was, what exactly are you accomplishing with bittul? According to Rashi, you are achieving the mitzvah of tashbisu, because according to Rashi, tashbisu is a passive mitzvah, and Tosfos says no. The mitzvah of tashbisu is actually the mitzvah of biur, it's active, and what you're accomplishing with bittul, says Tosfos, is that you're simply saying that the chametz is not mine. Okay. At Khan, we covered a lot of very basic principles today. To pick it up tomorrow from the two dots.